2022 Ford Ranger revealed at last. The facts behind Australia's much-changed ute, plus hints on new Raptor and redesigned Everest. Yes, it's time to strap in for another edition of the Cars Guide podcast, the show that takes you beyond the test drive. This is episode 210, Ranger Revealed. I'm Cars Guide Deputy Editor James, and joining me in looking at what could soon enough be Australia's best-selling new car, our key contributor, Chesto.
Hello.
And a special guest, Nova Breakfast newsreader and card-carrying car enthusiast, Matt DeGroote.
It feels very weird to be in a podcast that I listen to. It feels like I've broken down the fourth wall. I don't like having a conversation with your voice, James, is confusing to my brain.
Okay. No, that's the way it strikes most people anyway. So thank you for joining us, Matt.
Yeah, thank you.
We'll also look at the fresh metal we've been driving this week and dive into your feedback. YouTubers, if you want to plot your own adventure, you can jump ahead courtesy of the time codes in the notes below, and you can click on the chapter markers in the timeline. So let's lift the lid on one of 2021's most significant releases, and that is the Ranger. So our own Byron Matthew Darkus, over a period of time, has been privy to a whole bunch of delicate information that we've now been able to put out there into the universe. And this thing has been a half a decade in development right here in Australia. Much and all, it's going to be sold in 180 markets, would you believe it? That's the number of markets that the Ranger finds a home in. Mm-hmm. Second quarter of 2022, we should be able to touch, feel, drive, do all those things, even buy one. But for now, it's just been pulling the covers off, and here it is. So it's largely visual and getting the rundown on tech. And a whole lot of differences, although fundamentally it's on the same kind of platform. And I suppose the first question is to both you guys, what do you make of it aesthetically? Is it something that you like the look of? It's gone very much down that kind of US tough truck style. Mm-hmm. And what do you make of it?
Yeah, but I'll launch in first if you'd like, Matt. I think it looks fantastic, to be honest. I think that American-style, tough, boxy front end really plays well on a ute like that. And it's been a progression that's kind of slowly been happening since the days of the FPVs and HSV utes were obviously very car-based. We've slowly been becoming more boxy, more angular, more American. And I think this is just the final iteration of it. This does look almost like a mini F-150. And frankly, I don't think anyone could think that was a bad thing.
Yep. And how about you, Matt?
It's funny. I mean, it's not a category of car that I've ever really looked at and gone, I love the aesthetics of it in general. It's only once the Ranger started to do, you know, the super ripped up ones that look great. The Raptor looks awesome. But
yes,
because I've never, look, I'm the kind of guy that goes, oh, well, this is obviously driven by real men. Who do real men things, and I don't. And my cousin, he bought a F-350.
And oh, wow.
It wasn't until I sat in that and firstly realized how many gun compartments there can fit into a dual cab, but also just how comfortable they are inside and practical on the outside, that I realized that, oh, this is a car that, not the 350 is obviously just built for a muscle, but yeah, is a car that is designed to look good but also be practical.
Well, it's interesting, Matt, how many of those compartments become ice boxes in the Australian market. Yeah, it's a slightly different purpose. Yeah. But I know, you know, in the gig that Chesto and I find ourselves in, you can't help but assume a slightly different personality when you jump into different cars. You know, the whole you are what you drive thing. And often when I'm in a dual cab ute, I just want to pick up a packet of durries and get a coffee move and head towards the work site. You start to feel
mother and get started.
Exactly. get on the tools.
I'm not actually being derogatory there at all. I love dual cab utes. And I agree with you, Matt. They're either driven 50% by real men and 50% by people who just want to look like real men. Unfortunately, I fit into neither category. So yeah, right. I just largely watch them drive by, to be honest.
Yes.
So because, you know, and I've listened in previous episodes how much you talk about this market being so competitive but also so popular. And it's only once you start looking for dual cabs, especially on the road, that you realize, oh, they are everywhere. Oh,
they're everywhere.
Why are they so popular? Why?
I think they've become, my theory, they've become the new enthusiast's vehicle. Because the whole V8 sedan or whatever approximates that has diminished, utes have become an indulgence more than a work truck. They've for some time been a split personality family vehicle as well, recreational, the whole thing. And the recreational factor has just been dialed up. So a tough looking ute with accessories all over it is a new enthusiast vehicle.
Mate, I don't think you can discount the tax deduction factor too. This is, you're talking $50,000, $60,000, $70,000 vehicles that are instant tax write-offs for tradies across the country. Yeah, that adds to the appeal too.
Yeah,
great point.
Go to High Ace, know what I'd be having.
Yeah, now, it's a ripper. Like it's a beauty. The front especially of this Ranger is so good.
Well, I totally agree. And it's interesting, Chesto, that you mark out the fact that it's like the F-150. The chief of design or the chief designer for the F-150 said, we really looked at Ranger as the F-150's brother, as simple as that. So they've got to align as a genetically related vehicle because North America is very much in the mix this time because when the current or outgoing Ranger was released 10 years ago, it was meant to largely be for Australia and Africa, Europe and some South American markets, and the US got in late. And now it's a huge factor. So it's got to look right for North America as well.
Mate, it's a weird market, North America. There was a time when you had to, when bigger was better with trucks of all sorts, as F-150s and Ram 1500s and 2500s and all that kind of thing. But gradually over the last few years, and maybe the Ranger had something to do with it. I think the Ranger launched in the US 3 years ago, which was a very late bloomer over there. But since we've met cars like the Maverick, which is smaller again, the Hyundai Santa Cruz, which is smaller again. So it does seem like Americans' tastes are finally sort of shrinking a little bit.
Yeah, the thing to say is that Rouge plant for Ford in Michigan is still pumping out F-150s, and it's very much near the top of the tree.
But
and
I when you it's the best selling car in the world,
in the world, and when you think about electrification, they've just electrified an F-150. You know, rather than going for something dramatically different, it's still a very popular format.
I was just going to say, I lived in Tennessee for a couple of years ago, and it blew my brain how big their trucks are, but also how there's basically two types of cars, certainly in Tennessee. You either had the trucks or you had electric vehicles and hybrids, and it was sort of like they were just offsetting each other in terms of the whole road was carbon neutral because either you had the fuel guzzling trucks or your Toyota Echo.
I thought you were going to say they have both kinds of cars, huge trucks and massive trucks.
And giant SUVs.
I had a very simple, just a Chevrolet sedan that I could dead set have driven under. Like you're just going, holy cow.
What the big lift kit, your mud pluggers.
Once you go to a NASCAR race and you go to the, what do they call it?
When tailgate party at the front?
Yeah, the tailgate party. Yeah. And you're like, now there's 19 different wheels on this truck.
Yeah.
And a barbecue. It's the best.
Not too many. Yes, at those things is there.
with the F-150 Lightning, I could sense where you're going, Chesto. One of the key things, aside from the new sheet metal, and there's a redesign cabin and all kinds of stuff going on with this new Ranger, the big news really is under the hood, and that's led to a lot of redesign around the front end of the car because a 3-litre V6 turbo diesel will be available, a big step up literally and figuratively from the 2-litre turbo diesel that you're currently looking at. So tell us your thoughts on that. I know you've got some firm opinions.
Yeah, look, it's a big step up in terms of capacity and power, no doubt about it, but it's also a big step backwards. I mean, we live in a world now, as you rightly point out, JC, of electrified F-150s, you know, which are pre-orders are flying through Ford at the moment. They're shocked by how popular that car is. The Rivian's on its way to Australia, and by all accounts, is this amazing electrified ute. Why do we still not have any kind of electrification in this vehicle? I know it's set up for it, but to me, that's the one big disappointment. There's no form of even mild hybrid, diesel hybrid, electrification, nothing.
Not at launch anyway. You're right. I mean, the architecture has the capacity, allegedly, to accommodate that in the fullness of time. And I suppose Ford's playing what equates to a waiting game. You know, we'll get this thing in market and then see where the legislation, the regulations, where we're constricted and where we're not, and then start to think about that.
Yeah, but again, I just feel like these things, if America's proven anything recently, where there's almost no legislation demanding these things happen, Is it, do we have to wait for legislation, or is there some sort of pent-up demand for electrified products that we're simply not meeting at the moment?
Yeah. Well, witness when you see the success that Toyota has had over time now with hybrid, that's very much the stepping stone into full electric, and a lot of people are demanding it. You're right. So, yeah, interesting point.
Matt, would you buy an electric ute?
It's a great question. When we move to the next topic, it's something that I have spent a lot of time debating. Had a horrific experience with the Jaguar E-Pace one weekend when I got to take it up to Newcastle and was wildly underprepared for how underprepared Australia is for that whole scenario.
Wow.
To the point where I was of the belief that, hey, you know, if you just... when it says it's got 45-minute fast charging to get to 75%, they mean with their new 100-volt charger.
Oh, yeah.
When you then go to the supermarket and need to charge it, thinking, hey, 45 minutes will get me there. I think they're 5-volt chargers that they have at the supermarket.
See you tomorrow morning. Yeah.
But also, the freaking franchisee of that particular one decided not to renew the lease. And driving around in Newcastle trying to find any charge port on a weekend, and they don't have it.
Yeah.
And so ultimately you're just like this this power leech trying to find any PowerPoint in a car park. We're not ready yet.
No. That's aligns perfectly with the experience of our fearless leader editor, Mal Flynn, who had, I think, a similar experience in exactly the same car.
Yeah.
Just by happenstance. But yeah, you'll get that the infrastructure is playing catch up 100%.
And people talk about, you know, the rollout of these charge ports I understand the battery's changing rate. You can get sort of 20-minute is now a realistic recharge. But you cannot shift the entire market and have so little infrastructure.
Yeah.
When you're driving down the F3 or the M1 as it is now from Newcastle to Sydney, and it hit 0%, I ran out of battery.
Nice one.
And it was in safety mode, going 12 kilometers an hour until I could just pull off to the road.
Which is horrendous.
And these are the things that I go, yeah, sure. We all need to realize that it doesn't matter how much you love a V8 and the sound of a, you know, V12 and you know, you want your motorsport to be fast cars, Formula One. I think they go in the wrong direction, but it's the future.
Yeah.
I don't think here in Australia, the future needs to be, these cars need to be rolled out as quickly and as you were saying, because I don't think we're there yet anyway.
I kind of agree with that, Matt. There's a special kind of hell too. If you think searching for a charger is hard, wait till you pull up to a charger and there's four cars in front of you and you start doing 100%. That. Okay, 30 minutes.
Yes.
30 minutes.
Yes.
Oh my God.
I was photographing way back when in the original Tesla Roadster down in the Southern Highlands of New South Wales. And our range was saying we weren't going to make it back to Sydney. Mm. And I just said to the photographer I was working with, the wonderful Thomas Vialecki, who's famous for flashing photographs left, right, and center when he's taking them, can we sort of plug your battery pack into the motor just to extend our range and get us back to town? It was horrendous.
And you also don't realize, and again, I know that the tech is changing and it's changing rapidly, but those charge distances and the ranges are built on perfect conditions.
Yeah.
And so when you are just on a freeway and you're not braking and it's hot and you're trying to recharge it and it's taking 6 hours, I'm not interested. And so hybrid is the absolute, I think that's the answer. Hybrid, hybrid electric.
Plug-in hybrid, Look, that's good. Let's just finish off on the subject at hand.
Oh, yeah, we've done it again. Sorry.
That's okay. We can go anywhere you like, but my job is to just somehow steer the ship back. We've got the platform this thing rides on, the new Ranger. It's a 50-millimeter longer wheelbase and 50 millimeters wider in the tracks. You're going to have bigger wheels, up to 20-inch rims, a more advanced four-wheel drive system. Four-wheel discs will be available according to model, but, you know, you'll move away from rear drums. They're moving even further into history. There'll be space for two batteries and integrated electronic brake control for towing. Steering is next-generation electronic rack and pins. So, notwithstanding the fact that there's no hybrid or electrified version available, there's a lot that has gone on with this car. Yeah. And the extra safety that's gone into it means it's going to have a 5-star ANCAP crash rating. Mm-hmm. You'll have blind spot monitoring and lane keep assist type systems. Some pretty big steps ahead, really, in that department.
Mate, it's huge. There were some fears because this is not an all new Ranger. It rides on the same platform now called T6.2, I think.
That's right. Yeah.
As opposed to the T6. So it's a heavily revised product rather than an all new one. And that can mean a lot of different things to a lot of different car companies. But in this instance, it does look like they've done a ton of work with this.
According to Byron, everything forward of the engine firewall is new. And most parts are not directly interchangeable with the existing Ranger. So the coils, the shocks, the lower control arms, the upper control arms, knuckles, everything, the geometry, everything's different underneath it. And then a lot of the hard parts up in the car are different as well. That said, the model range initially will be the same, XL, XLS, XLT, Sport and Wildtrak. And there will be a Raptor, although there's been no official word. Byron's connections confirm that there will be one before the end of 2022. So that'll be interesting also.
And when you compare it to the Toyota Hilux, which is the best-selling ute in the country, which was just updated recently as well, they just kind of turned the wick up on the existing engine and walked away. Here's another 50 Newton meters. Best of luck to you. And off they went.
It's a flash tune. Yes. So
compared to this, it's light and day.
Totally.
What is the bigger attraction for people to buy these? Is it what's under the hood because they like the power, or is it the trimmings and the aesthetics?
I don't know. I reckon it's
from Column B, but I would never discount the what's under the bonnet being playing a pretty big factor.
Well, if the young blokes that live next door to me are any indication, they like a diesel and they like a big gruff exhaust, and they're generally apprentice tradies, and they love having a dual cab ute that lets you know they're coming from about half a suburb away.
Absolutely. Yeah. Which is why when you were talking about the fact that there's no hybrid or electric even planned or announced, absolutely they're going to go that way. You know, I go, they wouldn't need it right now. They wouldn't need to even be talking about necessarily, because the people are going to buy it right now are those guys.
It's true. And in the end, sadly, a lot of it is commerce. You know, what is going to sell? You can have all the environmental ambitions in the world, but these companies live to sell vehicles. So it's what's going to sell. It's true.
The other exciting thing about it, though, Matt, is the V6 diesel. So Hilux has kind of always followed Ranger in recent times. So Ranger went to 500 Newton meters. So the new Hilux upped the wick to 500 Newton meters. Now Ranger's gone to V6 diesel, which leaves Toyota looking a little bit underdone under the bonnet.
And Chesto, it's the evocatively named Power Stroke 3 litre. out of the F-150. So,
wow.
And the car, another interesting point is the car previously built exclusively in Thailand. Now we're going to get some of our production out of Silverton in South Africa, Ford plant that's had a massive investment. So we're going to have dual supply, which is kind of interesting.
Yeah, awesome.
So there you go. That's the other thing is, from a design point of view, the people in Melbourne, the big point is what they're calling these C-clamp daytime running lights. So it's in the shape of a, you know, C-clamp when you're in the workshop doing the woodwork. And that is the F-150 factor. It looks so similar to that. But they also wanted to avoid what they were describing as the plain Jane, very utilitarian. They wanted to add some visual interest to the design all around. And even the tailgate's got a lot of fairly elaborate cosmetic treatment to give it some stand apart kind of looks, you know.
And I think it looks great. I think it looks awesome. It's light years ahead of the current model. And as I said, I think that F-150 is a gorgeous looking thing too. So anything that looks a bit like that, I'm in.
Yep. And the other thing to note is, of course, this car will be twinned with the next Volkswagen Amarok.
Yeah.
And much as Byron attempted to get any kind of commentary out of Ford, to use his words, they absolutely shut down any questions regarding that German brand's vehicle. So we'll be waiting to see what heads our way from Volkswagen using, you know, essentially the same platform and hardware.
Yeah. But Ford have said it'll be different, the Amarok. I don't know how that's possible, but they've insisted that it'll be a different feeling and driving car, but it'll have all the same oily bits, so I don't know how that's possible.
Yep. All right. Well, that's good. Good chat. There it is, what we know so far. We don't have prices. We don't have the detailed specifications. But we know sometimes during 2022, you'll be able to shuffle in and have a look at one and maybe buy one.
Yeah. And guys, just quickly, so 2022, the new Hilux won't arrive till 2023. So this will go up against the current Hilux, right? So
let's put it out there.
What's going to be the best selling ute in Australia?
I think this one will. You know, if you took its first 12 months on sale rather than a calendar year, I reckon gut feel, seat of the pants vibe, as Mal would say, is that this will become the top selling vehicle in the country.
All right, Matt, you agree?
Yeah. Is it the case with when people are bouncing between Ranger or Hilux that it's brand loyalty or they just like the one that is best looking at the time?
That's a really good point.
My gut tells me that it's brand loyalty. I think if you're a Hilux owner, you buy Hiluxes, you don't swap. But I don't know, but that's a great question.
Yeah, yet again, to use the example of the young bloke that lives next door to us, he had a Hilux, then he's bought an ancient Nissan Patrol, set it up with his tradie lockers on the back, and he's got a sticker saying Toyota Recovery Vehicle on the back of it. So, you know, he's very brand focused. Yeah. However, I reckon if something is different enough and exciting enough, you might just, it's like the swinging voters in an election. You'll get enough to maybe turn the tables.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, if I was to enter the market, right, because obviously they're looking to get people towards the market who aren't there at the moment, you go, well, which one probably looks better? Which one has the comforts and the safety features and also those tech add-ons, lane safety, lane assist, et cetera, et cetera? You go, what's there?
Well, other thing is when you're actually sitting behind the wheel, you'll now have a digital instrument screen. You'll have upgraded multimedia. The materials used in the cabin are a bit cushier. Soft touch rather than, you know, harder plastics. So they're trying to make it a more appealing interior at the same time. So the whole package, I think it'll be really interesting to get to grips with one in the fullness of time.
Yeah, for sure.
All right. Now, let's move on to cars that we can and, in fact, have driven in recent times. And I'd like to start with you, Chesto, please. You've been in a car that is not built in Thailand. It's not built in South Africa. It is indeed built in China. Tell us about it.
I am driving the Havel, which rhymes with gravel. I've discovered it's the
acronym. Okay, fine.
It's a great word association.
Yes, a Havel Jolyon Lux, which is a very clever, very well-equipped little SUV. But before I get into the details of it, I reckon my absolute... Like, it's craziness how this ever got past the marketing people's desk. But it is built on a Great Wall platform that is the LEMON. Oh. So it rides without it. Incredibly, it rides on a platform called the Lemon platform, awesome. Which to me is craziness. But there you go. Look, the biggest, the single...
You can't be bitter about these things. It just happens.
So the biggest selling point of this car by a country mile is its price. It is $28,990 drive away, which means it's in your driveway for $28,990. And it gets a whole bunch of stuff. It gets the big screen. It gets a ton of safety equipment. It gets a sort of leatherish seating material. It's a really super equipped vehicle at $28,990 drive away. It's not the best driving vehicle I've ever experienced, if I'm being totally honest with you. It's got a rotary style gear selector that is slow is the only real way to describe it. It takes a little while to decide what it wants to do when it's going from reverse to drive or even selecting a new gear. And it's got some sort of interior design quirks. So the big touchscreen, for example, which sits above the dash, is positioned directly above this little touch-sensitive strip of air conditioning controls. So every single time I've gone to touch something on the screen, suddenly the aircon's blaring at me or the...
So it's like a capacitive control and proximity of your finger is going to adjust it. Yeah,
it's actually what it reminds me of. It's like, imagine, remember that kid's game Operation? It's like playing that, but at 110 on a freeway. So you try to controls that hit the right.
Wow.
To be honest with you, they're fairly minor annoyances in a car that is, you know, a really well-packaged vehicle. You know, if it's price and equipment you care about, this thing has lots of one and not so much of the other, which is a pretty good deal.
Yes.
And look, it feels like, you know, people have a lot to say about Chinese made cars all the time. I don't think it is best in segment at this point, but I also don't think it's a million miles off it. It's a pretty well put together thing.
Question without notice, Chesto, are they at 5 years unlimited kilometers on the warranty?
They most certainly are.
Okay. Well, that, you know, we always say that a warranty can be a reassurance for a lesser known brand, or a sign of confidence
I'll retract that statement. They are actually at a 7-year unlimited kilometer warranty now with 5-year cap price servicing.
There you go. 5 years cap price servicing. That's pretty appealing.
It's got the cool grill right at the front.
Well, it's got a grill at the front.
A grill. I think it looks quite cool. But I would never look at a Haval and go, that's a car that if I'm a responsible person that's in this market, responsible people are in this market, let's be honest, because you need a bit of size for probably the family that you got.
True.
I go, well, I can't put my kid in a Haval or Havel.
Yeah. Well, you probably can, to be honest. I mean, it has, you know, 7 airbags, all the high-tech safety kit. It's got almost like an autonomous drive function, which will hold you within the lanes on a freeway. Although it's kind of JC, you know what I mean here, but it's kind of the old school version of that tech, which feels modern cars that do that stay in the middle of the lane.
The older ones are pretty aggressive. They want to control.
It kind of bounces from one line to the other as you're going down the freeway.
Yes.
But mate, it's pretty well equipped in terms of safety kit. Let me just to answer that question for you, mate. I'm going to check its safety rating.
In the meantime, I reckon, Matt, it's an interesting question. I think my personal theory is there's a link between housing affordability and the entry point to the new car market. That as houses have become dearer, people in family situations are reprioritizing their spend and saying, well, we're going to have to reel it in a bit in terms of the car that we're going to buy. Because we've just got to get that deposit together. Just a personal theory.
Hasn't been crash tested yet, Matt. So no, to answer your question, no, you really couldn't put your family in a car that's yet to be crash tested. So I'm with you on that now.
So these cars are all right because, again, it's totally perceptual in my mind whenever I drive past a Great Wall or a Havel. I keep going to say Haval. I just go, oh, this is a snap kit model, right? Like as soon as it bumps into something, it's going to fall apart. But that they're worth looking at, are they?
Yeah, I think the kind of J curve of improvement is fairly steep. The first few were felt several generations behind in terms of the way they drove and probably the way they were built. But I think the recruitment of certain people that can come in and accelerate the process of improvement has done just that. And with every generation, it's big steps.
Yeah, and look, money talks for these things too. I should point out the one I'm driving isn't even the cheapest. You can get a premium version for $26,000 or $26,490 and drive away, which is really crazy value for a car like that.
Yeah.
But mate, look, I'm not part of the Chinese built vehicle like fan club, nor am I against them. Everything gets judged on its merit, obviously. But I do know that cars like the Great Wall Ute, have you seen those driving around, the GWM Ute? They are building a really strong fan base of people who are willing to jump on and defend them in forums and Facebook chats and all that kind of stuff, which is usually a pretty good sign they're doing something right.
Yep. It takes a while for any kind of preconception or prejudice to wash through and be disproved by the actual experience and the product itself.
And JC, you remember that Japanese cars went through the same thing. Then it was Korean cars and now it's Chinese cars.
I remember when cavemen were just chipping the edges off the wheels. all right, that's good. Thanks, Chesto. Now, Matt, a slightly different take on this segment. We're going to walk through your recent journey in terms of weighing up on the scales which way to go on your next vehicle. Talk us through that.
Yeah, although I'll say before we get into it, I just got a Facebook memory from this day last year. I got to drive the Rolls-Royce Ghost for a day. And man, like what a crash back to earth.
Yes, yes.
Well, now let's talk about the Hyundai Santa Fe.
Can I just say on my review of the Ghost, I gave it 10 out of 10 for value. Because if you want something that is down to the nth degree, it's maybe, you know, you're going to get it. You'll get exactly what you pay for.
It was when the guy who brought it to my house to go for the drive was talking me through it. And he goes, okay. And so then we proceed. He goes, just so you know, a Rolls-Royce doesn't start, a Rolls-Royce proceeds. And I'm like, well, we are f-ing on here. This is awesome.
Wow.
Sorry, I should have sworn. Sorry.
No, not at all.
It was the best. No, so and then you get out of your $950,000 car and you go, okay, well, what are we actually going to do here? But so I was driving a Lexus NX 300H. Loved the car, loved the brand, and thought it was just Sensational Driving was really into it. But unfortunately, it wasn't big enough with that coupe style back. And okay. I had to come up with another sentence there because I was going to say, unfortunately, we have a kid. But no, unfortunately, I had a coupe style back. We have a one-year-old. And yeah. There's just stuff.
Fortunately,
we have a kid. Unfortunately, it's got a coupe back.
Yeah. And, hashtag blessed.
Yeah. Thank you. Oh, thankfully, my wife will not be listening to this. And
it's good.
I said, let's sit down and we'll do a listen back. She's like, you can have this one. And she doesn't travel light, and he doesn't travel light as a result. And so we needed a bigger car. And I didn't want to. And you talked about brand reputation, how long it takes to change. I didn't want to go back from a premium brand. I loved having a Lexus, and I didn't want to drive a Kia. And it just was my own ego. And so anyway, so I was $70,000 was the price that I was looking at.
Yep.
And I've gone, well, let's just go a secondhand X5. Because you get sort of a 2017 X5. I'm like, how good's that? It's got the size, got the brand that I would love to drive. Mm-hmm. And I'm not spending $150,000 because when you got a one-year-old, it's just there to be trashed and thrown up in and eventually gotten rid of. And I went back and forward so much on the pros and cons of a luxury secondhand car that's a couple of years older but ticks a lot of the boxes that you like versus the not premium brands. What do you call it?
Yep. Sure. Mainstream
brands.
Yeah.
And a new car there. And yep. The question that I have for you guys as well was, is a premium car, best in market car that was rated 9s and 10s at the time, better than a 2021 entry level car? And they're not.
I can tell you why they're not, in my opinion, right? So the BMW would have plenty of equipment and still drive like a great car. And probably 3 years isn't really that long, so it probably matches a lot of the tech in the Santa Fe anyway. And you get that lovely feeling of, well, I'm driving a BMW X5. You know, you get that sort of joy as you're driving and parking in your driveway. The most important thing, though, I reckon, this is the thing I tell everyone, I know it sounds terribly boring, but the missing part of that story is that BMW at 3 years old is out of warranty. So anything that goes wrong with that vehicle from that point is coming straight out of your wallet. Yeah. Whereas the Santa Fe you buy in 2021 is still going to be under warranty in 2026. Anything that goes wrong, they'll take care of it for you.
Yeah.
I know that sounds like a small thing, but mate, that it can be massive.
I wholeheartedly agree with that. And I would say that so you buy your 2017 car, and in only a couple of years, it's 5 years old, not three, and it's a total roll of the dice in terms of what might go wrong. By 5 years down the track, depending on how that car's been used prior to you purchasing it, it could be a transmission. It could be God knows what, and it's big bucks. So, yeah, I think that's a big factor.
Yeah, and that was really – you couldn't build an argument to buy the X5 when you really drilled down on it. Yeah. And you probably couldn't build the argument to buy one, you know, for a kid anyway, unless you're making big dollars. Mm-hmm. And so then I was like, okay, well, if we're going to go the top end of either the Mazda CX-5 or the Hyundai Santa Fe, the all-new Kia Sorento, I was like, okay, I'm now that guy. And there's a lot of us who are now that guy, and you just concede that that's the car you got to buy. Yeah. And I still didn't want to sacrifice tech, trimmings, look. Yeah. And, you know, I was listening to you guys talk about the Mazda moving towards a sort of trying to be a semi-premium move to compete with the... I just think they are just such an uninspiring interior. I know they look lovely.
Right.
But they've still got the analog speedos. They've still got the same interior that they've always had.
Yeah.
And it just doesn't inspire. And
it's, mate... You've hit the nail on the head for me. So, mate, this again is a boring answer, but I'm going to give it anyway. One of the things you get asked a lot as a motoring journo is what kind of car should I buy, right? Yeah. And with very limited exceptions, the reality is most cars are pretty good. You know, like those three cars you mentioned there, Mazda, Kia, Hyundai, are all pretty good. You know, there's nothing wrong with any of them. They all drive well. They all have lots of stuff. So the answer to the question, what car should I buy? 9 times out of 10 is what car do you like?
That's it. That is completely my approach to that question, because invariably when someone has come up to you and asked it, they've already made up their mind anyway.
That's right, yeah.
And you know that in your heart of hearts, you're not doing them a disservice, because as you say, Chesto, you count them on the fingers of one hand or less, the number of truly ordinary cars that are out there.
That's right. And mate, if you put five people in a room, three would love the Mazda's interior, two would hate it, you know, or vice versa.
And similar to what you were saying about changing your perceptions of your brand, in my head, Hyundai is still the XL.
That's right.
The shittiest car ever built.
Whereas, it's interesting, Matt, because in a lot of the interactions that we've had with, you know, part of the Cars Guide world is retail sales or the people selling their car privately or dealers or whatever. Hyundai increasingly is just mentioned in the same breath as Toyota, Nissan, Hyundai, Kia. You know, they're all good brands. Why would I hesitate? But I suppose there are strands of that that just take longer to kind of wash away.
Yeah, and they make great looking cars. I know that you guys had said that it's a divisive look. I'm very much on the side that I love the angles.
Love it. Yeah, good.
I love the whole shift towards what looks like a Hyundai goes past and you look at it and you go, oh, what was that? And then you go, oh, wow, it's a Hyundai.
Totally.
And blows your mind. And you get in. And so with the 2021, the redone interior, like I know they're not branding it as a new car. Yeah. I love the ramp center console.
Yep.
I love the LCD screens for your speedo. I love the fact that it feels premium. Like it is a great car, and I'm driving a Hyundai, and I'm going, what's going on? Why am I?
Well, mate, there you go. There you go. You're the change agent in this world. Congratulations, and that's good. All right, great story. Well, I'll finish things off just briefly. Having driven this week a Skoda Octavia, the 140 TSI Launch Edition, which is strangely referred to as a stamp, but it's actually a hatchback. It's got a lift back. It's in the mid 40s, just under $45,000 before you put it on the road. It's a 2-litre turbo four cylinder, 7-speed dual clutch, and it's front wheel drive. And it's sort of in the world of, I want to say, a Passat, even a Mazda 6, but it's also 10K less than your base Volvo S60. And I think it's got a lot of that pragmatic European appeal. Like it's a European car, but it's not, we were talking about badge appeal. You're not paying for a badge. It's for those people that, I reckon it's for former Saab buyers, you know, that want something a bit left of field, but still European. And I really enjoyed the experience. 140 kilowatts, 320 newton meters. Because it's turbo, you've got a lot of pulling power from low revs. It's 4.7 meters long, so it's not small, but it's not massive either. And on the pluses, I had a lot of pluses with this car. It's responsive. The engine's a really good engine. Refined, it's well finished, it's roomy for given the footprint that it occupies. I think it looks good. I really like the way Skoda's going with its design. And it's at that money, I think it represents value. It's like three-zone climate, wireless CarPlay, 19-inch rims, leather, the ventilated seats, which I'm always a huge fan of, particularly as we're coming into summer. I love that, and they're powered. And the minuses, I was kind of splitting hairs, really. The dual clutch can be a bit shunty when you're in parking type maneuvers, or occasionally it'll give you a bit of a kick and you think, oh, that's not quite as smooth as I'd like it to be. And there's a stop-start system where you have to, as far as I'm aware, you have to manually go into a screen and turn it off each time you fire the car up if you don't like living with stop-start, which I frankly don't. No, just a little flea in the ear kind of annoyance each time you start the car. But other than that, I really enjoyed driving it this week.
I crossed the street the other day and I heard a car start. They used it. And I looked at the driver. I was like, you're the person that uses it. Like, you're the one. I've never known anyone that thinks it's a good idea.
I know. The cynic would say that it's a device to help manufacturers meet a particular number when it comes to emissions and fuel economy.
Which is why they allow you to permanently turn it off, because we know. Therefore, let's just get rid of it. Hey, Matt, just remind me, what car did you swap out of to get into the Hyundai?
The NX, the Lexus.
Oh, that's right.
Good. Yeah. So, mate, this might be one of your first full-time experiences with Apple CarPlay. Tell me about it. Has it changed your life?
Are you a fan?
Oh, mate, I love it. It's a non-negotiable for me in any new car now.
Thing that frustrates me is it's got wireless Apple CarPlay in all the models except, and I think it must be to do with the screen configuration.
Yeah. I think it's
The lesser models have wireless CarPlay, but the more expensive models don't. Yeah,
I didn't understand that. And I could only imagine there must be an issue with the syncing with this particular screen that they use.
I think it's a data and privacy thing, but anyway, that's
serious
story. Yeah.
Okay. It's fantastic, as you should use it as a selling point for a car when it says it's got Apple CarPlay.
Yeah.
I had not really used it before I had this one, and love the fact that your navigation is just so easily synced. Your text
totally
is so easily synced. It's beautifully integrated. I just
a lot of brands are getting away without putting nav into the car because they know that once you've got CarPlay, you know, you're going to be using your phone for nav and all of that. It becomes second nature.
Mate, I have to remind myself at the end of reviews now to unplug my phone and actually see what their user interface is like, because generally speaking, you just plug in and never see it again, you know?
Yeah. Yes, yes.
The other thing that I loved, which was such a factor that I'd never considered, it's a really smart, the Santa Fe is really smart. It's obviously designed for families, right? It's got the inbuilt shade screens for the kids at the back. You can have dual audio zone. It's got what I gather it's a Korean car thing that has white noise built into the entertainment system, so you can put the kid to sleep. But it's the remote forward and back was a feature that I never thought I'd use. But when you have a kid in one arm, stuff in the other, cars tucked into, you know, I live in a unit in Sydney that has a small garage. You'd have to put the kid down or carry him in your lap and ride the car forward to open the door and have to put him in. These such simple little things that, again, you weren't getting in the X5, the base models or the $70,000 range X5s.
Amazing. Super.
One of the other features you may not have discovered yet, but I love, I actually call it the My Dad feature, because when we were going on road trips as a kid, I had two siblings, we'd be in the back seat of my dad's old Commodore. And at some point on the trip, he'd be turning around with his arm on the passenger seat saying, "If you don't knock that off, we're going straight home." And so now the Hyundai has a little button you push that activates the speaker in the back.
Do you know my brother's device in that situation? When his two boys were young, they'd sometimes be driving down from Brisbane to Sydney. So long road trip. And they'd be just getting frustrated and grumpy and going off in the back. And he would make sure that they could see that he had a box of Maltesers in the front, right?
Yeah.
They'd notice it. And then he would wind down the passenger window, get one, and chuck it out the window. And they'd just be, "What?" He says, "If you keep this up, they're all going out." And they just shut up, and he'd give them a Malteser, and they pulled into line.
Awesome. See, now that's a feature that they should have. Hey, JC, is it I don't know you well enough to call you JC. I just realized
go ahead.
Listened to you for so long that I feel like we're mates. So one of the cars that I was recommended when we were looking was the Skoda Kodiaq, which I didn't do because the convenience of Hyundai servicing and the amount of places that it's just easy to get things done. So I didn't consider it, but is Skoda should have gone down that road.
I think it's a good one to consider. And I think Skoda for the last couple of years has been on a bit of a roll. And I think 2022 will continue to be a positive year. A lot of people are finding the situation used to be that Skoda, you were one generation behind Volkswagen and other VW group brands in terms of the technology. And that's not the case anymore. Mm-hmm. As a consequence, the prices have become a little closer, but there's still an affordability gap where Skoda presents a pretty compelling package. So, I would have suggested that you had a look at it. But
you could also argue that the Kodiaq was kind of the start of Skoda's new run. It's a really good
car. Definitely.
Right. Sort of set the ball rolling for the things that have followed.
Mm. All right. But now, let's...
No buyer's remorse either. You made a good choice too.
You did. You did. You did.
I know. It's very weird being proud to be a Hyundai owner.
Hey.
I love it. I get in it every time and I go, "I really like this car."
That's good. That's good. Now, let's just get on to some of the feedback that we had from last week, which was about the fact that whilst everyone was crying out for Ford to put a V8 engine in its Raptor, HSV, Holden via HSV, was quietly doing just that and came very close to putting a V8 powered sports cat into the market with an LT1, 6.2-litre LT1 in it. So Will Caswell says to us, "This car is a reflection on a risk-averse management team playing purely by the numbers and the old heads culture. It'll never sell." And he says a 62-year-old sales general manager would have said that. He would have paid 85 to 95 grand for a V8 with the performance figures this car puts out. And that would have been 339 kilowatts, which is about 450 horsepower. And 614 newton meters, which is a heap of torque. So he just says it's this kind of inability to move quickly, and he's gone hashtag management team fail. Fair enough. I mean, I think Holden at that time would have been in distress. They'd been returning balance sheets with flooded in red at the bottom, And whether or not they were willing to take a punt, yeah, it's unlikely.
Lose count of mistakes that were made during that period, to be honest. It was
too true, too true. Bill Katapotis, regular correspondent, says, I wonder if the fact that everyone's now been told there was a V8 Colorado almost released is just a teaser on what Walkinshaw could bring out and convert in the near future. Either way, I agree with Byron that they should be focused on high-performance electric rather than old-school V8. And I think it's true, you know, Walkinshaw modifying Amaroks, as we know, and various other cars, constantly looking for ways to demonstrate its capabilities. And they'd love a Chevrolet to come at them and say, yeah, yeah, do us a small volume run of V8 Colorados that we can either sell back into America or put in market through GMSV or something like that. I think that's probably quite true.
Yeah. It does seem convenient that they're sort of announcing it now, doesn't it? For no real, they can't sell it, so.
Well, we had some other correspondents that pointed to some of the specialist magazines had turned up news on this some time ago, but I think it was just the fact that there it was in the same, was it Panorama Silver, which was the colour that the original Batmobile Walkinshaw VL Group A car was painted, that it was a pretty public, oh, look over there. What's all that about? But the other thing Bill said is also knowing that Byron has an EA Falcon in his collection has taken my respect for him to a new level. So that's very good, Bill. Thank you. Now, also, my car in the garage last week was the i20N from Hyundai, little hot hatch. Awesome. And Reventon Rose said, that i20 is bloody ugly, though. And we'd been talking about how good it was as a little hot hatch package, and he brought us back to earth with his view on how it looks. And it is, it's a fairly aggressive-looking little frame.
I didn't think that when I drove it. In fact, I thought it was a more fun car than the i30, and to be perfectly honest.
Totally, totally. I was going to say, Dukulk, our old mate, he's curious to know how it's going to go as a manual only, because it's six-speed only. And I don't know about you, Chester, but I've been thinking there's going to come a day when we go to a release of a new product and there'll be a question as to whether everybody that's present can actually drive a manual.
Yeah, that's right. I agree.
And Matt, do you ever hanker for, you know, a three-pedal manual gearbox type experience?
Yeah. I mean, it was I was one of the lucky that people that didn't grow up driving in a big city. And so I thought, why wouldn't you have a manual until you get to the city and you're like, well, this is an incredible pain in the ass, but you definitely know how to do it. The other thing talking about Hyundai that you alerted me to without even realizing when I was listening to you guys talk about, I think it was Mazda or whatnot, but you were talking about the fact that all the cars are pretty good, right? As you said, Chester, cars are good. And so people are looking for other things. One of the things that I have really noticed moving to Hyundai is how much I miss the service and the treatment of customer service, right? So with Lexus, I needed a service. They'd come, they'd collect the car, they'd leave me a replacement car. I know I had, it was a top tier of coverage in that regard, but that sort of thing was wonderful. I knew that I was always going to have a car. Now to service the Hyundai, I got to roll into the Sutton City in Sydney or wherever your local
Building
is at 8 a.m., get in the queue, wait there. They don't give a shit. They let me, you know that it'll roughly be done around one or two-ish and sit there and wait. And it's one thing that you go, okay, well, if I was choosing between four or five cars that are basically the same, really, let's be honest, and you got no alignment, the one that makes you most convenient and feel a little bit special in the other parts, there's so much value in that.
Isn't that interesting? It's like when you buy insurance and the premium's one half of it, but the actual claims experience is the big deal. And Lexus has built its brand on that suck-up service. You know, you're going to get everything taken care of. So it's interesting that you missed that aspect. Yeah.
Yeah, and it is... Even things like I wanted to put, because again, I'm just holding on to some dream that is gone, but I wanted to put the sports kit on it that they've released after it came out. I've emailed so many times to say, hey, I want it. And they just, they don't get back to you. Like you're not special anymore on the road. And that's something that when you are trying to differentiate a market that is very similar, these are the things you now look at.
I say one thing, Matt, that might make your driving life a little easier is every dealership takes a super different approach to what they think is customer service, hey, and some are much better than others. and some are terrific. So, mate, if you're not happy, you can take your car to any Hyundai dealership in Sydney.
Well, that's true.
Find one that you like, because, mate, some of them are absolutely horrible and just in general. Some are good.
So if I bought it at, you know, and I'm sorry for those maybe not in Sydney, but I bought it at Sutton's, but I take it to a Tynan, which is...
You're at liberty to take it wherever you like. Yeah.
Okay.
Totally. Right. Now, what I was going to say is Sukhoi Romantic has had an absolutely massive light bulb appear over his head. I think it's a genius idea. Had a thought about EV dual cabs, whack the heavy battery pack in the tub and free up the front as a proper sealed boot or frunk. And you solve two issues with dual cabs as daily transport: rough, unladen ride and uncovered shopping. So we've had a few reviews lately where we were talking earlier about dual cab utes serving multiple purposes. When you just go to get the groceries, they are a pain in the neck because you've got that huge tub, and unless you've stumped up for a hard tonneau or something to go on the top and some dividers to make sure that your stuff just doesn't spread itself all over the tray, you're putting the groceries in the cabin, which is A, unsafe, and B, inconvenient if you've got kids and stuff in the second row.
That's a horrible idea. It's like, it's a bit like saying, I know how to fix this plane. Let's cut the wings off and have it drive down the highway. Well, it's no longer a plane anymore. If you're filling the trays filled with batteries constantly, it's no longer a
use. I think it would be like a blanket of battery along the base of it, and you still use it as a tray.
But would it not cut into your tray space? Isn't that?
Oh, maybe, Chesto. Don't come up with these black hat thoughts. I think it's genius. All right. And now, Andrew D on the intended Cupra. Now, Matt, this is a new brand it's part of the VW group. It was previously a kind of subsidiary of SEAT, a Spanish owned car brand that we don't see here anymore. So, Cupra, it's going to be around performance. And Andrew D says, my great mate in Germany test drove one with the intention of getting it as his work supplied vehicle. Said the ride was too harsh, even on German rural roads, which are like a billiard table. Mm-hmm. He said it was manic. He got an Audi A3 through the employer instead. Yeah, not apples against apples, but he said the Cupra was a rocket. So it's going to be quick, but maybe we have to watch out for its overall refinement, I think, Chesto, when we start to get our backsides in that car. So that's interesting.
I'm very excited to give those a try, to be honest.
Too true. Now, it's a cool looking car. Oh, totally cool. And the color scheme that the launch type cars is in, that subdued, I think it's through browns and charcoals and whatever, it looks amazing.
Yeah.
Now, Peter Pan, our old mate Peter Pan, Peter Panousis, says, I tip my fashionable cars guide cap. Now, that's because when we turned over 100 episodes, Peter was the lucky listener who came along on a road test with us to celebrate 100 episodes of the podcast, and we gave him a cap. So he tips his fashionable cars guide cap to those who enjoy or are proficient at haggling out of price with the car dealer. Unfortunately, that's not me. And as unpopular as the fixed prices being undertaken by Honda, Mercedes, Tesla, et cetera, might be, it suits me to the ground. No. So this is a kind of background issue, Matt, where various brands have gone to a fixed price model and the dealers are up in arms about it.
Yeah, because Genesis is like that as well, isn't it? They don't negotiate.
That's it. The price is the price. Yeah.
And that was another one that I looked at. And then when they don't negotiate, you feel like, and you guys might find this different, I like to know that I feel like I've had a small win.
Totally.
Even if you're not down to go below a level, like, let me have that win.
I've got bad news for you. They're never an actual win.
No.
I remember sitting, waiting to pick up a press vehicle from a dealership, a Volkswagen dealership in Melbourne. And I was overhearing, I was just totally listening to this conversation next to me, where a couple wanted to buy a Golf. The salesperson knew they could sell it several times over. Golf was in a really hot period. All they wanted was, I don't know, a set of mats or sort of a bonnet protector, just give me something. And this salesperson would not budge. And I just felt like, come on, you want them to come back and buy another one at some stage, give a bit of ground, you know?
Yeah. Mate, for what it's worth, I know I'm digressing here again, but I'm really pro the fixed price model. I don't understand why cars don't have a price. Everything else does, you know? And my theory is this, I always use, like, let's say BMW X5 as an example, right? If I go and buy a top spec BMW X5 for 150 grand, I bring it home, I'm feeling chuffed, I'm so excited by my new car. I show it to my neighbor who's just got one, and he tells me he paid 135. Nothing pops my new car bubble faster than that.
Yeah, that's true, eh? That's true. Well, Peter Pan says when he finds the price that's agreeable, he then goes for it and tries to get the best trade-in he can. So the dealer's going to maybe have something to say in there. Wants them to throw in some accessories or a free service or two. Pretty much, he agrees with you, Chesto, pretty much everything else we buy these days has a set price. Why should cars be any different? P.S. R.I.P. Chrysler, because last week the podcast more or less coincided with the news that Chrysler was going to exit the Australian market, and it had been sometimes sporadically, but around for many, many decades. So Peter's a little bit upset by that. And in fact, John Chester says that he was lucky enough to secure a May 21 build Chrysler 300 SRT in ocean blue, took delivery in August, turns a lot of heads, 6.4-litre Hemi V8, the exhaust sound. He's glad that he was able to purchase a piece of American muscle car history. Yeah. And he says, great podcast as usual, gentlemen. Thank you, John.
Good on him. Awesome car. The SRT core especially just about the best car you could buy in Australia for a while.
He mentioned the core, but he thinks a few are still out in dealerships. But he went towards the full fat one because you get a little more in terms of equipment and safety and whatever. But he's right. That engine sounds incredible.
Oh, it's a beast.
It is a beast. Now, finally, Mushandi says, talking about cars you keep until they can't stop moving, what cars would people have in their farm shed to be discovered later? He says, I'll make it harder and say it can't be a Holden or a Ford. So what are you going to stash away that's going to be an incredible gem? We'll put it out there to our listeners and viewers, and they should come back and tell us what they think is the one to put away. Do you guys have any immediate off-the-cuff thoughts? Chester, you're nodding?
Sure do, mate. You've heard me say it on this podcast before. Alfa Romeo 4C is a stash-away car. It's a carbon fiber tub supercar for 90 grand. You'll never see the like of it again.
Right. Matt, any thoughts?
Why is it so good in your mind? Just because?
So this will get very boring for a moment, but it basically rides on a Ferrari-derived carbon fiber tub, which means there's no, joiny bits. It's this super lightweight, constant structure, super rigid, no sort of give in it. It's the kind of thing that a $500,000 supercar would use, but and here it is being deployed on an $89,000 Alfa Romeo.
Yeah.
It was not without its flaws, that car, don't get me wrong. Mostly that you had to go to the dentist every week to get your fillings put back.
You got a road like a cart. Yeah.
But in terms of a sort of a one-of-a-kind piece, that would be in my shop.
And I think I stand to be corrected, but I think it even had unassisted steering. I don't think there was any assistance on the steering. So your connection, I remember describing it at the time, connection to the front tyres and the road was like reaching through the dash and just kind of holding on to them. It was really direct, like a race car. And I think a car that came along later, the Alpine A110, is every bit as good, if not better, than the 4C and just that little bit more refined. But they're both down that same track. But the 4C has that exotic look. Yeah, and as Chesto says, the carbon fiber tub, it's amazing.
What do you think?
What do you reckon you'd be putting in a shed?
Hyundai Santa Fe.
You stole my answer. one of the parts about being someone that is more into the car visual experience and the driving experience versus what's under the hood means that the cars that I think are sensational, that evolves so often, right? And so, of all the cars that I've gotten to drive, the McLaren 720S, the Rolls-Royce, the Porsche Cayman, none of these are going to really hold their value because they're just top end. This is how they look right now. Mm-hmm. There's no gem in that. And so, the best car that I've ever driven by far is the McLaren 720S. So I'd say put that in there and have it, in your garage, but you're not going to, that's not a smart decision in what they're asking there.
But I'm with you in that sense. I even though I said the Alfa 4C, I'm not a garage or shed kind of guy. If I buy a McLaren,
you want to drive it?
I bet I'm driving that every day, I don't care if I'm going to the shops to buy milk. I'm in that thing. I want to enjoy it. That's all.
Very good.
And I get classics are absolute classics. And when you see, a classic Ferrari or a Jag, Aston roll through, you go, that's amazing. I just go, I love modern cars. And I love the modern car of 20 years. I'll love more than I love this car now.
Yeah.
I'd take a stab at it and say I'd put a GR Yaris under a cover and put it in the corner, and it'll be a much aspired to vehicle in time to come. Anyway, that's just my thoughts. But with that, we have, believe it or not, reached the finish line.
Oh, there you go.
So I want to say thank you, Chesto.
Thank you, everyone.
And thanks so much, Matt.
I appreciate it. I mean, you know, I understand that my knowledge of cars is well short of yours. And so I listen to this pod and I use this site all the time. When I was buying my car, Cars Guide was such a useful website. But it's fun to hear you guys answer my questions as a car enthusiast without being an expert, because, you know, for so many of us who use your pod and use your site, it's just about learning things about the cars that you're driving every day. And I love it for that. So thank you for having me.
That's great. Would you prefer an electronic funds transfer or just a check?
Old school check.
Okay. All right. Now, also, it's time to say thanks to our production Swiss Army knife, tantrum negotiator, and head of quietly judging, Mr. Pritchard, for his fuss-free focus on podcast excellence. Today, he's wearing a T-shirt with a picture of a currawong and the words, "I'll fucking swoop you," heated pants, and rat loafers. Incredible, incredible ensemble. Jump into the conversation. Cars Guide is on Facebook and Instagram, or email us at comments@carsguide.com.au. Apple Podcast listeners, please take a moment to rate and review the show. 5 stars would be great. Thank you for that in anticipation. If you enjoyed the episode, make sure to subscribe to the Cars Guide YouTube channel so you can stay on top of all our latest content. But before we go, some of us are flying again, and I found myself at the Cut Price Airport car park earlier this week, catching the minibus to the terminal, pulled up, and as everyone was rummaging around the back for their luggage, I noticed old mate next to me with a puzzled look on his face. Couldn't see his bag. I saw one sitting there that hadn't been picked up and thought surely that was his. It turned out it wasn't the case.
Matt, I'm so sorry.
You know what? That's going to really hurt your 5-star review.
Mate, it's even true here in live, isn't it?